If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome into Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. I'm Craig Mish, along with Dean Vincmanic. We got you for the next hour, 60 minutes of fantasy sports talk mixed in with some wagering talk as well. Of course, we're going to talk a lot about the upcoming Major League Baseball season. Mm-hmm. Davis had his NFBC draft last night. We'll also preview the Oakland A's here on the show. And Davis, in the What Have You Done For Me Lately world, I thought we'd be opening up the show today talking about Kansas's very narrow win over North Carolina in the NCAA championship last night. But I feel like everybody today is just jacked up to see Tiger Woods back in the Masters again. Woods doing an interview just about an hour ago, telling reporters that he wouldn't play if he didn't think he could win. And I know Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, in the midst of opening day of Major League Baseball, we got the Masters going on too. This shapes up to be a great weekend.
Yep, great weekend, great sports week. We had a phenomenal college basketball game last night, the Kansas Jayhawks emerging triumphant. There was definitely a period of that game where it looked like Kansas was not off to the races. They figured it out. And I mean, you do kind of see that in college basketball a lot, because teams just, very perplexingly lose the ability to shoot for like 5 minute stretches. Like there'll be a 2 minute stretch of game time where neither team makes a basket. And KU came out at halftime, trimmed that lead to single digits, got back in it. And you're right, people are very excited about Tiger Woods. Just saw a tweet come across the timeline. The Tiger Woods is the most bet on golfer in each of these markets to win the Masters, to finish top five, to finish top 20, to make the cut, and to miss the cut. So people are looking to get that Tiger Woods action in. Great week to run a sports book, no doubt.
Yeah, great week for us, too, here on Sports Grid. And we'll begin with our headlines here on the show, April the 5th, 2022. Kansas Jayhawks win the championship. It was a close game. It was a tight game. But in the end, Kansas wins over North Carolina. Great season, by the way, for the Tar Heels. And Hubert Davis, want to mention for sure. Austin Meadows traded to the Tigers last night for Isaac Paredes. So the Rays move Meadows out of town after getting him from Pittsburgh a few years ago. The Tigers are locked and loaded, by the way, for the upcoming season. Johnny Cueto signs a one-year deal with the Chicago White Sox. Lance Lynn is going to be out for a period of time. And then Davis, Freddie Couples said he saw Tiger Woods in his practice round, and he said it was phenomenal. So I guess let's continue with the Tiger Woods discussion, because I think it's probably the biggest story that's going to happen in a while. We may not see Tiger Woods play, regardless of what he does in the Masters this upcoming weekend. So when you see the betting markets all gravitating toward this, I guess the question becomes, how much value do you have to get, and have the sportsbook just simply adjusted enough to where they're not giving you any value with Woods in any of these markets this week? Because certainly you made the case there. If everyone is betting on something, usually when we zig in betting, you got to zag. And I don't know if that's the case this week.
I mean, me personally, Tiger Woods having not played, probably not being in peak condition, I cannot see myself placing a wager on him to win, to finish top five, to finish top 20. But I felt that same way in 2019 when he won. In fact, had a Brooks Koepka ticket that week. So was not feeling, and you know, again, to be fully transparent, I kind of missed the Tiger dominance. Not a big Tiger Woods guy. You know, for me, and welcome to everyone on Radio, Davis Maddock and Craig Mish with you here as we are discussing Tiger Woods' return to the Masters at Augusta National. I mean, you know, to me, the greatest golfers and the guys who I really get jazzed to watch are, you know, Dustin Johnson and Scottie Scheffler and Jon Rahm. And, you know, it's kind of a generational thing. Obviously, I like it in general for golf when Tiger plays, because it means the games in DFS are a little bit better, more people playing, mm-hmm. more people watching. Like, I always, and it's like clearly good for the sport to have Tiger involved. But like, if Tiger misses the cut, it's not going to ruin my Masters weekend, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, this is also going to generate a lot of eyeballs on the Masters regardless, just with him playing. And so naturally, I think the hope for most people is at the very least make the cut and then let the chips fall where they may on Saturday, Sunday. But I think a lot of people are buying new couches and TVs this week, and I think that's where they're going to be for the upcoming Masters. And by the way, a lot of people go to play golf usually after watching the Masters as well. Real quick to the baseball trade. Rays, I mean, we really can't question anything with them at this point, Davis, but Austin Meadows leaving town. He's going to the Tigers. And I mean, the Tigers may not win a championship this year, Davis, but my gosh, this is the best looking Tigers team in a long time.
It is. And I mean, look, you know, the Rays, they run on a budget. Austin Meadows is heading into arbitration. He's got 1 year left before that. They don't want to pay him. They get Isaac Paredes back, who makes way less money. They have Josh Lowe, who they called up, who, you know, makes pennies. They have Brett Phillips and Harold Ramirez on the roster as well, who can fill those outfield slots. So they save some money. They get to call up this prospect that they'll probably trade in 4 years in a very similar deal. And the Tigers, you're right. I mean, the Tigers lineup, I was looking at it yesterday. I'm like, this is pretty good. You know, if some of those young pitchers, if Casey Mize and Tarik Skubal can be good, I mean, they could be a lot better than they were last year.
Definitely. We're also seeing an influx of rookies in 2022 with Lowe, as you mentioned, and Spencer Torkelson and Julio Rodriguez. This is going to be a special year for rookies in Major League Baseball and a very good rookie of the year race, I think, in both leagues. All right, coming up next, Davis had his NFBC main event draft last night. We're going to go through the first five rounds of some of those players and some late round picks as well. You're watching Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. Craig Mish, Davis Maddock. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes taking a look at the NFBC Fantasy Baseball Draft. Don't go away. Great.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Make sure you are following us on social media on Twitter. And here are our handles, at SportsGrid, at SportsGrid TV. For the latest news, notes, information, fantasy sports content, sports wagering content, opening day around the corner, Masters information. You'll want to follow us for the latest at SportsGrid and at SportsGrid TV. Well, naturally, fantasy baseball season is coming to a close. Just when it started, it feels like it's ending. That's kind of how spring training went this year, Davis, here in 2022. Of course, the lockout sort of disrupted some things. The NFBC has, I believe, two more drafts for the main event coming up, one Wednesday and one Thursday. You participated last night in your NFBC draft. So before we get to who you got, I think it's probably important for a little bit of a reset to tell people what these leagues look like, sort of, you know, how many teams, kind of what you're supposed to do, and a little bit about the rules too, if you don't mind.
All right. So fairly standard league, 15 team mixed league, two catchers, every infield position, a corner infielder, a middle infielder, five outfielders, and a util. You start that every single week. It's weekly lineups. You do them on Sunday night. Waivers run on Sunday night. You start nine pitchers. It is, 10 categories, batting average, home runs, RBIs, steals, and then the pitching categories, wins, saves, ERA, whip, and one other one that I'm forgetting right now, but basically the very standard rotisserie baseball category leagues. You do a 30 round draft, so it is you're gonna be there for a while. You gotta commit, you gotta know that. Back half of the draft last night, I was definitely getting it's like, oh man, we've taken a lot of fantasy baseball players here. So you have your 15 team contained league. And then, of course, you're competing in an overall prize pool against everyone, where the most points at the end of the season wins $175,000 to first place, $40,000 to second place, and you get $7,000 if you win your league, $3,500 for second, and your money back for third inside of your league. So it's a pretty cool format.
Yeah, it is. And I think that this shows you in these drafts where the real drafters are, because, of course, the most money is involved in these drafts as well. So that being said, the results are in, and let's take a look at some of Davis's picks in his big NFBC draft last night. We've got the first round Juan Soto. A lot of people, he is the favorite, by the way, for NL MVP. I don't know how he'll win it on that team, but he's the favorite. Shane Bieber, Mr. Consistent, followed by Zach Wheeler in the 2-3. And then here's the huge surprise, Adalberto Mondesi taken in the fourth round from the Kansas City Royals. And then Xander Bogaerts is not a name that I thought I would see pop up here. I don't remember, Davis, you and I talking about him all that much. And he's a very good player, by the way. It's just not somebody that fits the Davis Mack profile to me. So walk me through your first five picks.
So we picked at 7, and 7 is the latest that Juan Soto has gone in any main event draft. We went and checked it. And we set the max pick on Juan Soto. So Bo Bichette went ahead, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. went ahead, Corbin Burns went ahead. Our plan was actually to take Shohei Ohtani there, had Bichette and Burns gone before our pick at 7. And then we're sitting there and like, well, I mean, Soto is on average going as the second pick, so we should probably take him. Now, obviously, the problem with Juan Soto for fantasy baseball is he does not provide a ton of additional juice. So 29 home runs is good, but from a first round pick, it's not great. 9 stolen bases is fine. But again, from a first round pick, like Trey Turner is going to hit 30 home runs and steal 30 bases, right? And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to hit 45 home runs. And what Soto really does is he just anchors in your batting average. He is a career 300 hitter on over 2,000 plate appearances. He hit 313 last year. He hit 351 in the COVID shortened 60 game season. So you feel really, really good about your batting average. But obviously for the rest of your draft, you got to be making up those categories, right? You got to be finding guys who, you know, are bad batting average guys, but are going to provide you a little bit of juice in those categories. And the Nationals, by the way, not that great of a team, right? It's just really what it is it's locking in 700 plate appearances of a 300 batting average. That's super helpful. Our next two picks, we knew we needed some stud starting pitching. We all loved Bieber. We took Bieber ahead of ADP. We feel really good about him. Like, we love his skills. Same thing for Zach Wheeler. Now, Zach Wheeler has fallen in these drafts because he's been dealing with some shoulder tightness in spring training, but he did a simulated game last week, threw 45 pitches. You know, and it's one of those things. Like, if Wheeler's healthy, this is one of the best picks of the draft, right? I mean, 200 innings, 2.9 ERA, guy's going to contend for the NL Cy Young. If he's hurt, well, we made a bad pick, and it really is pretty much that binary. And then so we're sitting there on the clock in the fourth round. We had wanted to potentially take Tim Anderson or Trevor Story in the second round. They were both gone, so we took Bieber. But, you know, we're sitting there. We're 3 picks in. We're 45 picks into the draft. We don't have steals. We don't have home runs. We got to do something. And it was basically Mondesi or Aaron Judge at this point in the draft. And we basically thought the same thing we thought last year, which is if Mondesi plays 140 games, he's going to steal 20 more bases than anyone in baseball. And they like, you know the risk you're taking when you take Mondesi. And then the next pick, Xander Bogaerts, well, you just took a guy who might hit 219, would be a very good thing to take another guy who is gonna hit for 300, right? Which Xander Bogaerts is for sure gonna hit for 300.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, the dynamic that's always interesting to me is that, and I believe you said that you have somebody else that you teamed up with to draft. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. So the dynamic to me is always interesting because it's like when you like someone, like you like Mondesi, I always wonder what kind of convincing goes into convincing your partner in this one. Like, was he in on Mondesi too? Like, was he okay with, obviously he was okay with the decision, you wouldn't have taken him, but like, how did that conversation go?
So we had a big debate on Mondesi because obviously we took him last year and we had to eat it. He played like 20 games last year, but we knew because we had sat down on Sunday night and did a strategy call, you know, like, okay, what do we want to do if the draft goes this way? Who are some of the later guys we like? Which I think, by the way, is a really smart thing to do in when you're playing in these high stakes leagues, is to kind of reverse engineer your draft. So start with your later round selections. You know, who do I like in round 18? Who do I like in round 22? And how is that going to inform the categories that I'm targeting earlier? And one of the things we knew was we didn't love a ton of the Seal guys, like, you know, Miles Straw, Andrés Giménez. Like, we didn't really like those guys a ton. And, you know, you can see the whole draft board on my Twitter, and you can see taking Mondesi basically freed us up to just take the hitters that we liked from that point on, because we weren't having to jump on those guys. But it was a little bit of an argument when we were up on the clock, for sure.
I can imagine. Let's take a look at Davis's later round picks real quick. We got Ozuna in the 9th round. We talked about him yesterday. I think there's a ton of value for him in the 8th, 9th, and even 10th. Joey Gallo, not a surprise to see him on your team. You got two Yankees, Donaldson there. Kluber is such an intriguing pick. If Tampa Bay can get him like they got Morton, even close, that's going to be a fantastic pick. And then Josiah Gray is interesting too with Washington. I don't think he's going to win any games, but, you know, the peripherals should help you.
Yeah, so one thing we did realize was, you know, I mean, if Wheeler has to miss some starts or whatever, like, we just need some upside, right? Like, a lot of those later round picks, you're going to cut them anyways, but you'd like to have a guy with a theoretical upside. Gray was horrible last season, 5.4 ERA in 70 innings, but the you know, the stuff, right, you know, how his stuff moves, how fast it is all pretty good. So take a shot on him. If he's bad for three starts, we can cut him. Kluber, same thing. I mean, is it really going to surprise anyone if Kluber puts together a really strong season for the Rays? It feels like this is just what they do. You know, they signed Rich Hill last year, and then they trade Rich Hill because they fixed him, and then he gets the blister on his finger after he's traded. So that was generally our later round strategy.
All right. Well, we'll see if it works out for Davis this year in the NFBC. Coming up next, it's our 2022 preview in fantasy of the Oakland A's. Now, I know a lot of you are out there going, my gosh, this is going to be a horrible team. I won't draft anyone in fantasy from this team. This is where you would make a mistake. There's always diamonds in the rough. We'll see if we can find them on Oakland next. Stay on the grid. Great.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. I'm Craig Mish, along with Davis Matic. On our show tomorrow, we'll preview the Masters and also preview another team in Major League Baseball. Just a quick note from baseball, by the way, Bryson Stott, the young infielder for the Philadelphia Phillies, has been informed he'll make the team. I think that probably moves him to third base with Didi at short. Don't know what that means for Alec Bohm, who was so well thought of last year. We'll follow that story for you before the end of the show. We'll tell you what's going on there. So, Davis, this is like one of the most fun things to do, is looking at a really bad baseball team and trying to figure out who the fantasy stars will be. I enjoy doing this because I think that they're overlooked quite a bit. Now, We've heard this story, by the way, before with Oakland, Davis, right? Like, they're going to be terrible. They're going to be bad. And then all of a sudden, somehow, Oakland, like, scratches out, like, 75 wins. It just doesn't seem to matter who's on their team. I would say, looking at their team this year, it is extremely far-fetched to think that. Their FanDuel total is obviously getting close to 100 losses here with all the players that they've traded. But I think, you know, at the end of the year, they're going to have a couple of players where we'll look back and say, my gosh, that was a diamond in the rough.
Well, I have a surprise a little bit later for us here in the segment. One of these diamonds in the rough that is in the projected starting lineup for the Oakland Athletics is on our NFBC team. We took one of these guys. One of my co-managers felt that one of these guys is a stud. But you're right. You know, the A's are sort of interesting in that way. Like, the team results might be bad because they don't have the high-end talent. But they do always kind of find guys who, like, are hit their platoon really well. You know, lefties who smash righties who they start once a week against lefties and things like that, which is, I guess it's sort of bad for seasonal fantasy baseball because, like, are you really starting Chad Pinder even though he's only going to play twice a week or whatever? But it is kind of fun for DFS that they have these guys who do just absolutely rake in their platoon splits.
Yeah, and also worth mentioning, Bob Melvin, who did such a good job managing them for so long, is gone. And Mark Kotze is a first-year manager for the Oakland A's. Here's their opening day lineup, and don't hold me to this one, because certainly it's the A's. It can change. Tony Kemp is going to lead off. His ADP is, they don't have anyone in the ADP in the top 400, but Tony Kemp's is the highest because, you know, essentially he's going to get the most plate appearances, and he had 8 home runs. He'll steal some bases. Elvis Andrews is on not only the back nine, but he's like beyond amen corner here, Davis, at the Masters. Sean Murphy's ADP is 241. He can hit. He had 17 home runs last year. Seth Brown hit 20 home runs last year, too, but his batting average is tough. Jed Lowry, yes, he is back again in Oakland, one of the longest running players in all of baseball. His ADP is 700. Not taking him. Steven Piscotty hasn't been able to stay on the field. ADP 700. Sheldon Neuse is the interesting one here, Davis, because they sent down Eric Thame, so he's going to open up as their first baseman, and so I'd probably give him a ADP of at least 100 higher than what he's going here, 748. Everyday first baseman on a baseball team, got to take that. Kevin Smith, and then Christian Pache, who's going to bat ninth. Great fielder, but really can't hit. So I am curious, who is that diamond on your team? Who is the guy from this lineup?
It is third baseman Kevin Smith, who was acquired in a trade with the Toronto Blue Jays. Kevin Smith in the minor leagues last year, 410 plate appearances, 21 home runs, 18 steals, 285 batting average. The combined projections at FanGraphs have him for 304 plate appearances, 12 home runs, 6 steals. Not a good batting average, but obviously he was always old for his level. So he's 24 years old. So a 24-year-old at AAA, you would expect him to do very well. So it's just very much a matter of you know, what is going to happen. Like, is this guy any good or not? Might be the first guy we cut through 2 weeks of the season, he's got zero hits and striking out a bunch. But just the idea of a guy who's got a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed. And also, you know, if you look at the Athletics roster, third base is a spot that they are pretty thin at because they are DHing Jed Lowry. I mean, Jed Lowry, and Stephen Vogt, by the way, 38 years old. Jed Lowry also 38 years old. I don't think they're trying to have those guys go out there and play at third base. So they don't really have a backup third baseman unless they want to try and play Chad Pinder there, who has played second base and shortstop. But I don't think so. Kevin Smith does look like their opening day third baseman. And if he hits, he'll move up the order. If he doesn't hit, they will figure something out. But that is that's the guy. And then also, I am interested in Chad Pinder as well. Because if you, I don't know, Craig, if you care about the StatCast data, you know, the exit velocity and the barrel rate and everything, Chad Pinder always rates out really well in those against left-handers. They don't start him against righties very often, but just, you know, for example, last season, he had 233 plate appearances, 6 home runs. I'm just curious what would happen if they just said, you know what, we're going to suck anyways. Just go get 600 plate appearances and let's see what you can do.
It feels like he's the perfect player to play for half the season and trade, but at least for now, they have not decided to open up the season with him as a starter. Now the value for the A's clearly is going to be on one of these pitchers, because Oakland plays in a very pitcher ballpark friendly, and they always seem to develop guys Like Chris Bassett's a good example of that. Like Sean Manaea is a good example of that. It did not work out for Jesus Luzardo. They traded him to Miami. It did not work out for AJ Puck Davis, who they put in the bullpen. But here is the potential, and I say potential because I don't think this is set, but they're starting five. Frankie Montas will be at the top. You're not getting any discount with him. His ADP is 142. But the rest you kind of are. Cole Irvin made a lot of starts last year, and there's like no trust factor in drafts for him. And Dalton Jeffries is very well thought of. You can get him for nothing at the end. And then I know nothing of Adam Oyler at all. And Paul Blackburn, I remember at the end of last season, like fading because he just was just so tough. I mean, look, Oakland just doesn't have back-end starters. That's the key here. But I would bet that of all of the players that we've talked about, someone in their starting rotation is going to pitch better than we think. It feels like that's just like an Oakland thing.
Well, I mean, I do wonder if it is Dalton Jeffries. I wonder if, you know, given how brutal their rotation is, I wonder if AJ Puck gets moved out of the bullpen and they try and stretch him out in the middle of the season just to see if he's got anything. You know, obviously because he was so well thought of for so long, he was the number six overall pick, you know, quite some time ago. You know, they do have a couple other prospect-y type guys hanging around. They traded for this Adrian Martinez guy from the Padres. They traded for Zach Logue from the Rays, or from the Blue Jays rather. So and you, I mean, the A's, they're gonna try all sorts of things. Like we know what they do. But looking at this, I do think Dalton Jeffries, that is maybe gonna be a guy that I monitor a little bit here the first couple weeks of fab bidding. The projection systems think he's decent. The issue is he never really has struck out a ton of guys at any level. The last time he really generated a strikeout rate that would kind of make you your eyes pop. The problem was he was a 23-year-old in Double A, so that can kind of go. It's just not really that predictive.
Yeah. Also, want to mention their best player maybe on Oakland is Ramon Laureano. He's suspended for the first 27 games of the season, and obviously his ADP is much higher than a lot of these players. But he will not be on the opening day roster. If there's a second best player to draft for me in fantasy, it's the player we're going to talk about here, and that is Lou Trevino. His ADP, he's the closer of the A's. His ADP is 242. Davis, they have nothing in the back end outside of Trevino to get saved. So you may say, well, you know, Craig, they're going to probably trade this guy in July, aren't they? I mean, Davis, they're probably trying to trade him now, to be honest with you. But the reason why I like a player like this is a couple of reasons. Number one, Davis, no pressure, right? Bad team, come in with a lead. If you get it, great. If you don't, fine. And then how many games is Oakland going to win that are going to be 3-2 or 4-3? Oakland may only win 65 games, but of those 65, what would you say are within a run or two? 40 of them? 50 of them? They're not going to be scoring a lot of runs this season. So Trevino is going to be set up for a lot of opportunities. I like taking guys like this with some experience in the back end on teams that aren't good that can't hit. So I think Trevino fits that profile for me.
Yeah, the distribution of saves is pretty fascinating, right? You know, because like a bad team can still generate a bunch of saves, right? I mean, you know, we were just talking about, I took Mark Melancon in the NFBC, right? But if their distribution of games just happens to randomly be a bunch of close games, that'll be really good for him. I do wonder though, I mean, talking about AJ Puck, I do wonder if maybe they would throw him in that role if they trade Trevino, just because, like, look, I mean, this guy has been their top prospect forever. They've always wanted to make him happy. Make him happen. He's got 24 innings in the major leagues to his record. But certainly he would not be the first guy to be a failed starting pitching prospect who ends up becoming a really good reliever. I mean, in fact, that is kind of what most really good relievers were, is they were drafted as starting pitchers. It didn't work out. They got hurt, whatever. And I don't know. Maybe I just want AJ Puck to happen, kind of.
I don't know of any 6'10" relievers that have been closers like this from the left side. They called him like the little unit, like Randy Johnson. I remember him pitching at the University of Florida, thinking he could be the number one overall pick in the draft. But I can't imagine they're willing to just punt his career. Maybe it's closer. Maybe it's starter. Maybe it is opener. I mean, who knows? I think that, look, Oakland's going to have someone we'll be talking about, Davis, in 3 weeks going, hey, remember when we did that show, we talked about Oakland? This is the guy that ended up doing it. So we certainly will see. Coming up next, it's time for a little fantasy or reality. We'll hit on some NFL coming up next and the Houston Texans. Also a little baseball as far as rookies go and a very exciting team in the Seattle Mariners. So stay on the grid. Davis and I will be right back for more fantasy sports today. Coming up at 1 o'clock Eastern, Kevin and Donnie. Got it from there. Scott Farrell takes over later today. We'll be right back here on Sports.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
NBA back in action tonight, Davis. Of course, last night was the college basketball national championship. One of the games, not a marquee game by any stretch. Maybe we thought it would be at this point. Lakers and Suns. I know Frank Vogel coming under a lot of heat lately. The Lakers basically, I think, kind of got a win out here to have a shot at making the play-in game or make the playoffs. But I guess if Vogel is gone, this is sort of like a LeBron James, who do you want to coach the team next year? That's sort of how it works.
I mean, That's what you would think, right? But then there's been a lot of sniping and internal reporting and stuff that actually the front office of the Lakers, like, look, LeBron, you're under contract. You don't have an opt-out. You signed your deal. You're not going to hold out because everyone knows LeBron wants his wins, right? I mean, and his points. Like, there is a pretty good chance that LeBron can end up tops in, like, every statistical category in basketball history and missing time. Not good for that. And it's kind of been suggested that the team was so unenthused with the Russell Westbrook trade that Anthony Davis and LeBron James really wanted. Remember, I mean, they basically traded an entire functional rotation. I mean, they traded Kyle Kuzma. They traded Montrezl Harrell. I mean, they traded Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. They, like, basically, like, half of their rotation from last season and multiple first-round picks were traded for Russell Westbrook. That ranks as, maybe considering what it cost the Lakers this year and LeBron in his age 38 season, one of the most disastrous trades in modern NBA history. I mean, total disaster. So I wonder if they're like, you know what, LeBron, you're playing. We know you're not going anywhere. We're not going to trade you. We're hiring the coach that we want, and we're making the personnel moves that we want because there's not a ton you can do about it.
We'll see after the season. Lakers have a few games to get in, and if they don't, it'll be a playoffless LeBron James this year. Wow. All right, let's find out what Brett's got in store for us. Here's fantasy or reality.
All right, well, Julio Rodriguez is going to make the opening day roster for the Seattle Mariners. So, Davis, we'll start with you for this one. Julio Rodriguez, Jared Kelenic, and Kyle Lewis will start the majority of games for the Mariners this season. Is this a fantasy or reality?
Well, I guess it remains to be seen because Kyle Lewis is currently, working back from a torn ACL. He felt good running the bases this last week and could participate in a minor league game soon. And, you know, with baseball, look, I love baseball, but definitely if I was choosing a sport to come back from an ACL tear on, I would choose baseball over basketball or football or hockey or soccer or anything like that because of the movements that are required out of you. Kyle Lewis can obviously DH a little bit when he comes back. That's what Ronald Acuna Jr. is going to do for the Braves. Their DH right now, opening day, is probably going to be Jesse Winker, and Winker can just play the outfield while Kyle Lewis is getting back. The question really, I guess, so there's that. And then the other question here is, I mean, what is Jared Kelenic, right? He's 22 years old, so certainly not a finished product. He did hit 181 last year and struck out 28% of the time. He graded out as a way better guy. He graded out as a 60 hit tool guy. So you need him to do better than that. Now, the Mariners, I think, have a really wide range of outcomes, Craig. I think they could be really good. If Kelenic hits like the guy he's supposed to, if Julio Rodriguez starts on fire, I think they could be pretty good. And if they are good and Kelenic is struggling, I wonder if he ends up going down. So I think there's enough up in the air here that I'm going to say fantasy.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating. They have the 2020 Rookie of the Year in Kyle Lewis. They had what they thought was the Rookie of the Year in 2021 in Kelenic, and then the Rookie of the Year this year in Julio Rodriguez, and all playing the outfield. I'm very worried about Kyle Lewis at this point. He has just not looked the same since 2020. I do think Kelenic will be fine, and I do think the point you brought up of Winker. Winker can clearly play the outfield. I don't think there's any question about that. So in terms of majority, I'm going to say fantasy here. Also, Eugenio Suarez is another player that they added Seattle last year too. I do think that you mentioned very important to see how they start off. Let's also not forget last year Seattle had the worst run differential of virtually any team that was close to the postseason. They looked like a sub-500 team for the majority of the year. The data did not back that up. So I will say fantasy here. I'm worried about Lewis. Hasn't looked right. It's been banged up all since 2020. And when you win the Rookie of the Year, Davis, in 2020, and you're only playing 60 games, what does that even really say about you? Lewis was sort of a late bloomer in terms of prospect, too. I'm in on Rodriguez. I'm in on Kelenic. I'm out on Lewis. I got fantasy for this.
All right. Our next question. The Brandon Cooks rumors are heating up again with the NFL draft under a month away. So, Craig, we'll start with you for this one. Brandon Cooks will be traded before the season. Is this a fantasy or reality?
Easy reality. Houston is playing this perfectly. They probably do not like what they've been offered right now. What is the rush? There is none. This is the NFL. It is just like all other sports, where if you don't get what you want initially, teams will never admit it. It is not good to root for it. But the reality is, Davis, someone will be hurt, and Brandon Cooks will get traded to a team where he has an opportunity to play more. Right now, the teams that are probably vying for Odell Beckham Jr. see Brandon Cooks as the backup option. So once Beckham is done, Cooks goes to the team that did not get him. This is a rebuilding effort where you have the Band-Aid. It's on Brandon Cooks. He's the last one left, essentially. They got to pull that Band-Aid off. They got to trade Brandon Cooks. I don't know what he's going to go for, honestly, at this stage. Is it a three? I mean, is that even reasonable to think he could go for a three? I think that's probably the best that they could get. I got him traded. He is not going to be on this team to start the season.
No, I think he is going to be, and I think he will probably be moved a little bit closer to the trade deadline because there was a report that came out yesterday that the Houston Texans have been asking for like a second or third round pick for Brandon Cooks, and no one wants to bite at that price. Not because they don't like Brandon Cooks, but his contract is actually a problem. Not the size of it, not the amount of money, but that it's only 1 year, and trading a third round pick for a guy in 1 year deal. I mean, you'd rather have, you know, whatever wide receiver is going in the third round. That's cost controlled labor. You're going to have him for 4 years. A third round pick makes like $600,000 against the cap. Brandon Cooks makes $16.5 million against the cap. So I think you're probably right in the context that the teams that are looking at Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham and some of these other veteran wide receivers who are still hanging around, they're also probably monitoring the Brandon Cooks market, but they are not prepared to pay this price tag that the Houston Texans are asking for. And the Texans are wagering someone's tearing their ACL in training camp, right? Someone's tearing their Achilles. Someone's injuring their shoulder and not going to be ready for the start of the year. Maybe we can get a second from the Packers because they're going to be so desperate or whatever. But I'm going to say fantasy, and I'm going to say he remains, at least until training camp starts, I'm saying he remains on the Texans roster.
All right, our last question of the day is about the weekend, because he told E! News that he might pull what he's calling a yay, but older viewers may call it a P. Diddy Puff Daddy or a Prince, artist
a Prince.
Formerly known as Prince. Yeah, there you go. So the weekend, Davis, we'll start with you. The weekend should change his name. Is this a fantasy or reality?
Well, I mean, I feel like this is generally not a good idea just because of how people find and discover and categorize music. You know, I think it would have been, you know, when people were buying physical media, when you went to Sam Goody and bought a CD, and even further than that, you go to the record store and you buy a record. I feel like that was a little bit easier to do, change your name, right? The record store, they write The Weeknd / whatever, you know, they write Prince / the symbol, and they just put all the records in the same place. They put all the CDs in the same place. But how's Apple Music going to handle this? How's Spotify going to handle this? Do they put it all under one category? I know that we talked yesterday about the Grammys, and they had that Silk Sonic group that was Bruno Mars, and was it The Weeknd or someone else? And Anderson .Paak, right. So how do I go to find that on Apple Music? If I search for Anderson .Paak, do I find those guys' songs, or are they not there? So I think that this would be a mistake from like a monetization standpoint, an SEO standpoint. Like, I feel like you can't be flip-flopping your name and categorization around if you want the people who give you your 0.001 cents per listen to keep listening to you. I feel like this would be a misstep, Craig.
You know, I mean, I like the reasoning, but I feel like Googling anything gets you where you want to be. Like, I feel like if I'm hungry and I Google new car, it's going to show me the food that I was thinking of on the internet. It's so bizarre how that works. Like, I feel like they're like this artificial intelligence is ahead of us in that way. I'll say this. This is fantasy because it just doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter. And Davis, this is what I would say. Anyone who changes their name in any realm, we always refer to their original name. It goes without fail, this happens. And we can even translate this to sports. Does anybody call Ron Artest Meta World Peace? I call this guy Ron Artest, and I always have called him Ron Artest. I probably always will. Do I call Kanye West? No, I call him Kanye West, and I still call Prince Prince. And Tim Raines changed his name to Rock officially. And I don't know if you remember him, Davis, but I mean, it's fun to call him Rock Raines. He is Tim Raines. He went into the Hall of Fame as Tim Raines, even though he officially changed his name to Rock and then changed it back. So, Davis, for me, I guess I would ask you, is there anyone that has been able to pull this off where they have changed their name and we, as media, as fans, actually refer to that name? Because I do not.
I think Diddy, right? I think that he successfully pulled it off, right? Because what his original name was Puff Daddy, right? That was the OG name.
Puff Daddy.
See, I don't. I call him. I would hear him referred to as Diddy, right? Or P Diddy or P or whatever. I think that. Maybe that's a generational thing. Maybe because you knew him as that, but by the time I came around. I think that's what you have to do. I think you cannot allow anything to come out under the old name. Don't answer interview questions to the old name. Consistently refer to yourself in the third person as the new name. It's got to be a very concentrated effort. I don't think you can just kind of lapsedaisically go into it.
Yeah, and I understand if it's for like family reasons. Like we've seen, I think the last 5-10 years, is we've seen like the players add junior and senior to the end of their name, right? Like that's been like the thing. And I think that that's fine because it's like a family thing. And or if you want to refer to another last name because of someone in your family, your mother and father, like I get all like that makes sense. But just to arbitrarily change the name and to think that that's going to stick, I don't know. It's not something that I think is going to work, but good luck if The Weeknd changes it. You know what The Weeknd should honestly do? He should add another E to his name on The Weeknd. Isn't that like the easiest thing to do? Like actually be The Weeknd? Never understood. Where is that E on the end of his name? Just put it there. Anyway, Sports Grid, I could have done that for Sports Grid 60. Sports Grid 60 is coming up next. Final thought here on the show, and then we'll turn it over to Kevin and Donnie. Scott Farrell, 3 o'clock Eastern. He is ready to take you coast to coast a little bit later. We will be right back on Sports Grid. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We've got one more team preview on tomorrow's show. Also a preview of the upcoming Masters with Dubs on our program tomorrow. Looking forward to catching you then. But before we get out of here today, let's turn it over to Davis, see what's on his mind in today's Sports Grid at 60.
It's
So I was doing my NFBC draft last night, and you know, one thing you notice when you get into the real nitty gritty of fantasy baseball is how many guys go from, oh, you know, I stole 8, 9, 10 bases to zero. To like literally they just stop doing it. And then randomly one of those guys will come back and do it again. Paul Goldschmidt was a guy who did that last year. Zero stolen bases for 2 seasons, stole 12 bases last season. And that kind of just got me thinking, like, if managers decided they didn't care and guys were just doing it, like how hard is it relatively for a guy like Paul Goldschmidt, you know, some like guy who's not fast, but who's relatively athletic, like could CJ Cron be stealing bases? Could Nolan Arenado be stealing bases? Like, I think that is really fascinating because clearly a lot of these guys have the ability to do it and they just don't do it because it's not that important in the context of baseball anymore. But I did just, that was just a little wrinkle I was thinking of.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, Juan Soto stole close to 20 bases one year. I think one season, Albert Pujols may have stole like 15 or 20 bases out of nowhere. I don't know how that happens. All right, so spring training has come to an end. This is it. It is over. Always like to end with my same thought about spring training. I don't know how anyone complains about it. It is the most wonderful time of the year. The weather changes. The players are friendly. You know, the teams are friendly too. My highest recommendation I can ever give to anybody is that plan your trips for next year to Florida and Arizona. It's some of the most fun time that you could possibly have, especially if you have kids too. Always sorry to see it end here where I am in South Florida. That'll do it for our show. Thank you to LTN, of course, as always, for getting us on the air. Danny and Ryan on the graphics, our producer, Brett Levy. And for David Smatic, I'm Craig Mish. We will see you tomorrow here at noon. Have a great day. Break, break.